Today in the EU, the economic destiny of the Union, according to the Letta report. Former Italian Prime Minister Enrico Letta has finally released a report that all EU institutions have been waiting for. This document is dense but important, as it offers some answers to the unprecedented challenges facing the European Union, the war in Ukraine, inflation and competition from China and the United States. What impact will Letta's solution have on the economic future of the EU?
Hello and welcome, I'm Giada Santana, and this is Today in the EU.
We're here with Anna Brunetti, Euractiv's economics editor, to analyze the latest developments around the report.
It's been quite a week for the journalists at the Economics Hub, as everyone in Brussels is talking and reading the Letta report. Why is this report important?
So yeah, it's true. People have been talking a lot about this report for the past few months. There were a lot of expectations placed onto it. I guess there was a long list of wishes and demands that both the industry and the political class wanted to see responses to in the report. But I guess there's only that much that one single report can do to solve Europe's problems, because really what people were expecting and hoping to see was kind of a panacea of all the economic problems that Europe is facing. And this doesn't only apply to the Letta report, but first and foremost to the Draghi report that will come up in June. The reason why there's such a close attention to the report is that Europe is really, really facing historic challenges that are quite unparalleled compared to other times. Just as a starting point, for example, just to mention one, we're facing a funding gap of as much as 620 billion per year just to support the green and digital transition. And that's an estimation by the Commission. And if you look at the figure, you realize just how much Europe should have in ready funds to really make sure that the economy doesn't collapse. So it's not only the digital and green transition, which will be an essential part of its economic prospects going forward, but it's a multi-layered list of other headwinds, including, for example, a very much changed trade global environment.
And when it comes to trade, what is the role of the US and China in shaping the solutions this report addresses?
First and foremost, we're also seeing really wide and heavy measures in the US and China that are throwing money at their own economies from the public funding point of view. And that results into these two jurisdictions not only becoming more and more competitive against Europe's own competitiveness, but also attracting more and more European companies away from the bloc. So there are really, really a long list of, say, economic headwinds that we're facing at the moment.
Right. As you're saying, these challenges are unprecedented and the expectations for this report were comparatively really high. Why was Enrico Letta chosen to draft this report in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. I guess he definitely has a high-profile curriculum. He was a former Italian prime minister. He has a strong academic background in EU politics and economics. At the moment, for example, he's the president of the Jacques Delors Institute, and it's not a coincidence that made him quite the perfect figure to lead this report. Jacques Delors was the one man who kind of oversaw the creation of the single market as the president of the Commission at the time. So the single market was created in 1993 as the centerpiece of European integration. And it has undoubtedly shaped Europe as we know it today. But what is interesting to notice is that the problems that were there at the creation still persists. So, for example, it's not a coincidence either that Letta has repeatedly put an emphasis on the three markets that were left out of the creation of the single market,
which are
the energy market, the telecoms market, and financial services. The characteristics of those markets then are highly symbolic of the ongoing and persisting, let's say, mindset problem that Europe continues to face. Notably, it would be a continuous tension between the national dimension and the European dimension.
Right. During the press conference, he talked about how precisely there were political motivations behind this choice back then and how we should overcome this now. Do you think that's feasible?
One good starting point to really figure out whether it's going to be feasible or not is the kind of debate that has taken place at the Council. So we've seen Letta coming out with a really bold report. It didn't steer clear. It didn't shy away from political questions. It doubled down on some aspects that are quite political, such as the need for a EU-wide public funding capacity that continues over time, such as the need of EU-wide industrial policy to make sure that Europe doesn't lose out one of its strengths, which is also its manufacturing capacity.
We have to be really the European Union, because today we are not the European Union in many important sectors, where we are 27 countries, not the European Union.
But what we've seen in the Council, it's a very clear shift of the attention, of the focus, away from that discussion on whether public funding should be the way to go, onto what they really wanted to focus on, which is private markets. And that's why they talked much more of the CMU rather than of any other public funding discussions.
Let's explain what the CMU is.
The CMU is a decade-long plan to shore up the bloc's capital markets. Again, a wish list of what the sector would have wanted to see, but has steered clear from enacting practical innovations in the financial sector space for these 10 years. What we could see going forward is that we start to delve deeper into actual proposals to make the environment for finance and for investment much more in line with the times. Letta definitely, for example, delves deep into quite a long list of proposals and strategies that could help achieving that goal.
We're talking about a report that is 147 pages long, so incredibly dense. We just mentioned the pushback from the Council when it comes to European public funds. What are the other contentious issues that came up?
If we focus on the CMU, on the Capital Markets Union bit of the conversation, the most political aspect of it and the one that has faced the most heated debate has been the proposal for centralizing supervision. That is indeed a more contentious point because it sees member states fearing that they could lose out their national clout in favor, in this specific case, to, for example, France, which is the country that hosts HESMA, which is the Financial Markets Authority. Not only that, but it really signifies, it really represents that tension that we were talking about before between the national clout and the truly European kind of mindset that Letta, for example, is calling for and that we will probably need to foster and strengthen going forward.
And he's been renownedly a Europhile, right? Even in his political time as prime minister in Italy, something he wanted to stress, part of his report was the help to SMEs, to small companies, and how they could benefit from a single market.
Exactly. What is interesting to see for me in his report is that the fact that he's put such an emphasis on the political aspect doesn't preempt the importance or replace the importance of the private market, meaning the urgency of shoring up the private funding capacity of the bloc. For example, one of his proposals for SMEs would be to get European different stock exchanges kind of join forces to set up an IPO access point tailored to SMEs. In that way, they would be able to play on a common venue where they can go through that vital stage of floating to the public market, and then later on they could choose the stock exchange of their choice.
What is the goal of this policy?
The whole point is really to facilitate the investment environment for SME, and that could in the future also entail making it easier from the investor's perspective to take on that risk without facing high regulatory thresholds. Another interesting thing that he was really pressing on as well is the deep tech side of things and investment into tech, and he wants to do a similar things in that sense of setting up a European dedicated stock exchange for deep tech investment only. That's quite groundbreaking as an idea for Europe, and that would also entail probably providing a better capital treatment for investors wanting to go into those assets.
So as you were mentioning, there is quite a strong political will to single-handedly focus on private capital markets, which is something that the United States has been doing. Can we get a comparison just to understand how practical it would be for the European Union to follow the same path?
If we think about it, does Europe have the private funding capacity at this stage to single-handedly resolve the economic needs, which are short-term, long-term, and huge in terms of financial needs? Just if we take, for example, 2022 figures, the US's markets is four times as big as the European one, We're talking about $40 trillion in the equity market alone for the US compared to 10 trillion euros in the European markets.
Beyond financial integration, the report focuses on energy and telecommunication. Why is that the case? This is a choice that has a legacy that comes from a certain historical context. What is that about?
Exactly. So as we were mentioning, these two sectors are heavily reliant on the infrastructure aspect of the market. And what happens is that this infrastructure are historically linked to member states because they were mostly state-owned to begin with. Because these companies were heavily state participated, we can imagine the problems that the liberalization of these sectors has faced through the years. To date, there are several problems that persist with this kind of dynamic, whereby the infrastructure remains a vital element of the sector itself. And it is truly complicated and complex to manage it and manage the balance of powers between who owns the infrastructure and who owns the operators that need to use the infrastructure. So there's an ongoing dynamic of balance of powers between the infrastructure owners and the utilization from operators. And the liberalization part needs to ensure that operators can access fair terms. Same could be said for energy, although the market itself and the historical legacy problems that it's faced are deeply different. But I guess what unifies the two sectors is really this kind of contentious dynamic between the role of the state and the ownership of the infrastructure and ensuring a more lively and competitive markets for operators.
And finally, what type of impact do you foresee for this report?
One question that we have been asking ourselves this week and asking our sources as well is what of an impact this report will have. And my impression from the UK Council this week was that it was already quite clear that member states would have cherry picked the topics within the report that they liked and kind of ignored or neglected the other parts that letter came forward with. So in that sense, that's why we've seen the conversation steering towards the capital market union and boosting private funding capacity for the bloc. In terms of the most nitty-gritty proposals that it goes into, and there's plenty of them, it will be very interesting to see which ones of this will have a follow-up and which will just fall into oblivion.
Thank you, Anna. I'm Giada Santana, and this was Your Activist Today in the EU podcast. Visit Your Active to stay on top of the latest news, sign up for our podcast newsletter, and if you haven't subscribed yet, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever it is that you get your podcasts. Leave us a star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite streaming platform. It will really help us spread the word about our work. This episode was produced by Miriam Sanz de Tejada, Nicoletta Yonta, and me. See you tomorrow! As part of our commitment to accuracy, inclusion, and transparency, Your Activist is part of the Trust Project.